Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast. I'm Doug Krisner. You can join Brian Curtis and myself for the stories making news and moving markets in the APAC region. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you get your podcast and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Joining us now is Mark Matthews, Managing Director and Head of Asia Research at Julius Baer, with us in our studios in Singapore. Mark, look at you. In our studios at seven in the morning. Excellent. Well, listen, you know, we've had this rally in tech shares that has helped trim the drop, the little mini correction that we had to only 2.7% now. So is the correction over?
I don't know, but I would say that the consensus was looking for earnings growth back in the beginning of this year for the fourth quarter of last year to be slightly negative. And the actual earnings growth for that quarter turned out to be 4%. And so going into the first quarter, the consensus was only looking for about a 3% earnings growth. And I could be wrong, but I think we might be on track to be close to double that. Because these, with the exception of Netflix and Meta, generally these big tech companies have been coming out with good results.
It's kind of interesting, too, when you consider the rates environment. Obviously, we have a higher neutral rate now with the economy able to support earnings growth, even though rates remain elevated. Putting aside for the moment that really kind of tepid reading on first quarter GDP, how would you assess the American economy right now? Do you think it's pretty strong?
Well, I don't think we can put that first quarter GDP aside, actually, because it was an important number. And if you exclude inventories and exports, which are volatile series, the number would have been 2.8%. So I think the economy is strong, and I think that's the reason why market rates are high. I would say we don't see the 10-year going back to, you know, 5% thereabouts where it got to in October last year. But I think it will stay high as long as the economy is running hot. And we're looking for the 10-year at about 4.5% in 3 months, which definitely offers competition for stocks. The only thing I would say is, just thinking back to the 1990s, the 10-year yield was always over 5%, and the stock market managed just fine. Not everybody wants to own bonds.
Yeah, we're back to the old normal in a sense. But, you know, if growth remains reasonably strong, it doesn't have to be very strong in the U.S., but reasonably strong, it seems that, you know, the companies are doing their thing and it's helping us offset these higher rates in that. Now, in terms of China, because we had that pretty solid GDP, Bloomberg Economics is raising its forecast on China's growth for this year, but it still sees China as missing the target, 5%. But it has raised it. It sees a lot of aggressive government investment, Mark, and it says, you know, that could catalyze some sort of stronger recovery. It's not jumping up and down, but it looks like the environment is sort of okay in China at the moment. I note that you are tactically bullish. Why?
One of the reasons is precisely what you just said, Brian, that the economy is either, in my opinion, slowly troughing or beginning to rise. I know there were a few weak numbers for March, like retail sales, but there were other numbers that were strong, like fixed asset investment. And to my mind, the most important thing is what's going on in the property market. And what I've noticed there is transaction volumes are rising. And price discovery between buyers and sellers usually signals that prices are finding some kind of equilibrium. So property is the largest asset of Chinese people. If the price stops falling, it will be a great boost to sentiment. And yes, we are tactically bullish on that market. It is up 15% from the low in late January. It's still down 40% from its peak in 2021. It's a very inexpensive market. Hang Seng on 8 times versus the long-term average of 11 times. And every negative has a positive. And in the case of the Chinese stock market today, all the problems that China's gone through over the last few years, one of the positives you can take out of that is it's forced state-owned enterprises to become better run. Maybe also the regulators are borrowing a page from Japan's book. But whatever is happening, the companies are becoming more efficient. They're increasing dividends and buybacks. And that's not something I think that's imbued in prices currently.
A big question, though, in my mind is the persistent weakness of the Chinese currency. Right now, offshore, we're just on the strong side of 7.27 against the greenback. Yes, much of this is a strong dollar story, but we'll China continue to benefit from a cheap currency or a less expensive currency as a way of sustaining the export-driven part of the economy?
It's certainly something that is being talked a lot about in the context of the Japanese yen. And, you know, can China keep the renminbi where it is, where when the yen is where it is? I think they will not allow it to go down a lot more, or at least if it goes down in a very slow and orderly fashion. And the reason I say that is because they are worried about capital outflow. And as much as they've sealed all the doors as much as they can. If you remember 2015, when there was a mini devaluation and the panic that caused, I don't think they want a repeat of that. So you could look at, you know, when a currency goes down in one of two ways. Either you could say, oh, it's already gone down. I won't sell anymore. It's already cheap enough. Or you could say, oh, it's gone down. That means it's going to go down even more, and you panic and you just get out whatever way you can. I think most Chinese would be kind of the second way. they would panic, and I think the government knows that. And for that reason, it won't let the currency go down.
Well, that kind of leads me into a question I put to Mark Lucchini earlier about how with the Fed tight, Asian central banks will likely tighten policy to protect their currencies. With China, it's a little different, and with Japan, it's a little bit different. But for other Asian markets, that might not be good for Asian equities, but it might be pretty good for local currency bonds. Do you see it that way? And if so, what do you like?
Well, we like dollar-denominated Asian investment-grade bonds, and the reason is that they have a higher yield than their U.S. counterparts. Yield on average for our portfolios, I think, is about 6.8% now, and the duration is about half what the U.S. investment-grade bonds are. So U.S. investment-grade bonds have an average duration of around 8 years, 7 or 8 years, and, mm-hmm. and here in Asia, it's more like 4.5.
Mark, before we let you go, you mentioned Japan earlier, and I'd like to get your views on what's happening, not just with the BOJ, but whether or not there continues to be opportunity in the equity market.
Yes, I think there is, and the currency's related to that. I must say the way the yen has been dropping has to be a concern to the authorities, but I think the overall direction is probably lower. It makes Japan extremely competitive. For example, minimum wage in Japan, which is 800 yen, is $5. That's less than a third of California. So I think that it's become a very competitive economy, and they have the best brand names in Asia. And many of those companies that have good brand names have returns on equity in the high teens or above. I do believe it is a market that will continue to do well, yes.
Yeah, and in 20 seconds, Korea maybe doing some of the same things with governance?
Yes, they are. They don't have nearly the same kind of returns on equity or brand names that the Japanese do. I must be honest, it's...
The Capital Ideas Podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
It's not a market we spend a lot of time looking at it because our clients don't have single stock access.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Mark. I jumped you to the head of the line. And thank you very much for joining us here live on the program. Mark Matthews, Managing Director and Head of Asia Research at Julius Baer. Elon Musk making a surprise trip to China. He's trying to get approval for driver assistance software in the country, something that a lot of analysts think might help the car makers' decline in revenues. And he immediately met with Premier Li Qiang. We bring in Danny Lee now, Bloomberg Asia transport reporter. There is some connection with Li Qiang in that when he was the Chinese Communist Party secretary for Shanghai, he helped Tesla set up that plant there in Shanghai. Is this a close relationship?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a meeting of two allies, and of course, for Elon Musk, who is, let's say, fairly friendly with China. And so this meeting is so important for Tesla because of the fundamental value of the idea that his initiative on rolling out so-called full self-driving will actually help the company. And China is a critical part of that a market where, in terms of electric vehicles, this is, you know, electric vehicles being a top seller. Everyone likes tech if you're a driver, and so therefore this could be a potential goldmine. But there's regulatory hurdles that Elon Musk really needs to overcome. So a meeting with Premier Li Qiang, very, very important.
Absolutely. Danny, let's take a closer look at what you're referring to. I mean, the sensitivities around some of the cameras that are part of the full self-driving system. That's a big objection, I would imagine, on the part of Beijing, right?
Yes, that, and also just fundamentally data, because as we've known for some time now, China's cracking down on data sharing, where the data leaves China and goes to. And so, you know, going data from China to the United States, for example, is clearly a sensitive issue. So this meeting, the goal from Elon Musk and then to have this meeting, maybe we'll see some movement on full self-driving in China in the near future, because that would be the clear objective and outcome of this visit in particular. And so, you know, with Elon Musk visiting China, especially only a week after deferring his India trip, it clearly shows his priorities, particularly after recent turmoil for Tesla.
It's pretty interesting how Mr. Musk operates, because we thought that he might turn up at the auto show China. Instead, all of a sudden, he was going to go to India, and then the India trip got postponed, and then, you know, right away he turns up back in China. So that's pretty interesting. And also, it's interesting that Chinese policymakers, if you look at the report in the CCTV, they're talking about how, you know, this shows how it should work between U.S.-China relations. What do you make of the politics of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's an extraordinary time, particularly just coming hot off the heels of the U.S. Looking to get TikTok divested from ByteDance and have a clear separation. And so with someone like Elon Musk backing the likes of TikTok staying within Chinese hands, for example, clearly Musk has set his stall out and has set his kind of mark out of how he wants to pursue business, because clearly anything that China does and the US have in disagreements it's still always a risk to Tesla, particularly given China is Tesla's biggest foreign market.
We were talking about Tesla's full self-driving and the hurdles that the company is likely going to encounter in the China market. But when you get a look at what's happening right now with the Chinese manufacturers and how they're using advanced driver assistance systems, is that becoming a lot more common right now?
For Tesla, it needs to maintain some kind of competitive advantage, particularly on the technology, something that Chinese drivers, discerning Chinese drivers, want more technology, and particularly at less cost. So for Tesla, this is critical because it's been trumpeting its own version of effectively this assisted autonomous style driving. Other Chinese makers of EVs have this in trial at the moment, and it's for Tesla to kind of catch up in a market like China. It's a big playground for it to test and potentially deliver some of the results and analysis of that globally.
Yeah. All right, Danny, thank you so much for joining us here. Danny Lee, Bloomberg Asia Transport Reporter. Joining us now on the program is Dave Daglio, CIO of Twin Focus, with us live here on the program. So, Dave, nice to have you with us. It's good to have a big sort of lofty discussion about markets, at the beginning of the week. We have slightly different theories out there. I mean, why we had this risk-off period, and part of that is Fed hawkishness and tighter and sticky inflation, also tighter liquidity, high valuations also in some people's minds, and then, of course, geopolitics. But it seems pretty clear that for the reversal, the big rally that we got at the end of the week, that came down to earnings. So my question to you is the die cast on this being a strong earnings season? Or, you know, will it be a little bit more of some good, some bad?
The market is up. We had one of the greatest non-recessionary rallies of all time. I think a pause made sense. We had, some inflation expectations move up a little bit. That's not good news. Obviously, geopolitics going the wrong way. What is working in the favor, though, of earnings is that, you know, leading economic indicators are stabilizing here. This is a surprise to the market. So I think it does matter. And I do think on average, the earnings estimates will be up and to the right. I worry more about the second half of the year as some of the commodity pressures and some of the unhedged positions begin to roll in.
Brian mentioned sticky inflation, and at this point, it's unclear as to whether or not we're going to even get any rate cuts this year from the Fed. Are you concerned about that pivot that the Fed has had to engineer here, tightening at least expectations for rate cuts?
Yeah, I think the Fed is, you know, like my straight A student kid that just got 2 F'd on his test. So 10, 15 years of straight A's, you give them a hall pass on the first one, but the second one you get worried. And the reason I'm worried about the central bank is their goal for, 25 odd years has been fighting inflation. And if you had told me the market would be a couple percent from its all-time high, leading economic indicators are accelerating, the non-farm payroll prints were benign, unemployment was low, I would never think we're going to have rate cuts. And so the entire time I've been suspicious of this. I'm glad to see the Fed is getting more hawkish. I think that's their role, and I think that's what they should do.
Well, things change. I mean, we did have that very long period of near zero interest rates, which kind of caught everybody, I suppose, by surprise, back from starting around 2007 and 8. And now you have a different paradigm. I mean, if we're stuck now in the high for longer theme, if this is the new normal or the old normal that's come back, do you expect the Fed to not only not really cut interest rates for the rest of this year, but maybe even alter the pace of balance sheet reduction?
The Fed's job is more and more of a tightrope than it used to be. And what causes them onto the narrow tightrope is clearly inflation expectations and the volatility around that. If I was a central banker, particularly in the United States, I'd be very worried about what's happening in the five-year forward tips market. And that's a good inflation, barometer. And the U.S. is discounting higher inflation rates, or at least the bond traders are. So I,
well, that's
I
my point. The could they speed up? Could they also? My point is, could they also speed up the pace of balance sheet reduction if it's that bad? If inflation's this high and is this sticky?
I think everything's up. I would. You know, they haven't asked me. I mean, I think the, you know, the broader question that I would be asking today.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hey, is... You know, you need to give yourself some room so that if you do have an economic problem, you need to cut. And so the policy here of just letting rates lift a little bit, even having a little tightening of your balance sheet, allows you to respond if we were to have other crises going forward. So just from a margin of safety, I'd love to see the Fed, the size of the balance sheet, et cetera, get a little more hawkish.
So much of the conversation we've been having here is around artificial intelligence, especially when you look at what broke last week in terms of Microsoft and Alphabet. Yep. We've got some earnings this week that may be able to clarify this theme a little more. I mean, AMD, which is one of the leading chip makers, I don't know that they're as greatly exposed to this space as, let's say, a company like NVIDIA, clearly. But we're also going to be hearing from Apple. How are you feeling generally about, you know, this theme of artificial intelligence? I mean, we've seen such a dramatic run over the course of the last several months. Is this something that still has legs, do you think?
I think it has legs. And we've never seen anything like this. I want to just, you know, go back a year. The estimates were plus or minus, $20 billion for NVIDIA on the out year. They've now increased by $32 billion. We've never seen anything like this. The demand trend, the early pull for the capital spending on the front end is truly staggering. And it does look like Google and Microsoft are going to be early winners from this. The other interesting thing is if you had just told me what the earnings estimates would do for Microsoft and NVIDIA in particular, I wouldn't be surprised where the stocks are. So it doesn't look to us that they're either overvalued or undervalued. And I think all that matters is the next direction of earnings. I think, though, that on the margin, investors are looking for acceleration here. This is why SMCI came in a little bit when investors became suspicious they would not accelerate earnings and revenue this quarter delayed response to their press release. So, yeah, we're going to be watching these. We're looking for acceleration. If we don't see it, that is concerning.
So it's interesting to hear you talk about your fears of higher inflation, yet pretty excited about AI, and AI is fueling the market. So that's why I opened up with that first question, which is, we're worrying about inflation, but look what the market did on the strength of the earnings. So do you think that, you know, there's a lot of good opportunities here, even though the cost is up because inflation is high and rates are high, but that the potential gains in revenue are strong enough to offset that?
We're watching. You know, we're watching. What we have seen so far, and we got good evidence of this clearly in the last 24 months, and then we have history over the last, 100 years or so, is that equities and earnings in particular do pretty good in inflationary environments. The knee-jerk can be detrimental to the multiple in the short run, but in general, they do pretty well. What we've seen so far this quarter is, in general, companies are powering through, slightly higher wage rates and things like that. So our outlook for equities is constructive. We're still cautious in spots. We've advised clients, though, that to have an out-of-the-money call option protection in commodities, and we've begun to look there. They begin to perform better. The equities in particular are still cheap relative to their NAV or the long-run cash flow potential at current spot. So we spent more time there.
Dave, how are you feeling about fixed income right now? And in a fairly balanced portfolio, what should that ratio be, fixed income versus equities?
Yeah, on the low side of history. How's that? You know, one of the famous lines from Warren Buffett is that what separates good from great investors is the ability to say no. And what we've been talking to clients about is long duration treasuries, investment grade bonds, high yield bonds, even a lot of private credit look pretty extended to us, unless we have nirvana, which is, you know, getting back into where we were over the last 15 years, which is no inflationary pressures and very low rates. Anything other than that, I think you lose money in bonds, particularly as you stretch out duration.
Curious what you might think about Asian markets briefly in 20 seconds or so.
Yeah, you know when you're sitting at the Taylor Swift concert and you're waiting for that Uber to come and you just don't know when it's going to come, but it's going to come. I think the Chinese market looks like an Uber after a conference, and it's going to come. Those are good companies. They're at very reasonable prices. We're intrigued. We just don't know when.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting comments. Great session today, Dave. Enjoyed chatting with you. Dave Daglio there, CIO at Twin Focus.
This has been the Bloomberg Daybreak Asia podcast, bringing you the stories making news and moving markets in the Asia Pacific. Visit the Bloomberg podcast channel on YouTube to get more episodes of this and other shows from Bloomberg. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen, and always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.